The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 13th of March, 2019. On the podcast today, I have James Draper, Chief Executive Officer, and Francesco Petruzzelli, Chief Technology Officer of advertising technology company Bidstack. That's B-I-D-S. And the guys discuss their recent progress and outlook for the company. I also have on John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talking about gold and the following companies: Anglo-Asian Mining, Bluebird Merchant Ventures, and Codal Minerals. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you. Top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where there's a whole host of other content. And in fact, the featured article right now is on Block Energy. That's BLOE. So check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to keep up to date with all the companies in your portfolio? On the free Vox Markets app, you can create multiple watch lists and get instant news alerts about any company you follow. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is James Draper, Chief Executive Officer, and Fran Petruzzelli, Chief Technology Officer of Bidstack. That's B-I-D-S ticker. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much for having us on.
Thank you. No, you're a young, exciting company, you know, and maybe some people don't know about you. I know about you quite well. But for people not familiar with what you do, James, please summarise what Bidstack's all about, please.
So Bidstack, what we do, our core business is that we operate within the video game market. We agree multi-year exclusive to Bidstack arrangements, deals, for us to own advertising space that sits naturally within the gaming environment. And we offer up those advertising slots, whether or not they be a trackside hoarding or a pitchside LED billboard space or billboards in an open world. We offer up those advertising opportunities that sit within the narrative of the game up to the biggest advertisers in the world, allow them to buy on a programmatic basis, which enables us to sell the space on scale, and based on who the gamer is, they will see different types of advertising. So if it's a 25-year-old male playing in Shoreditch, they'll see a different advert to a 50-year-old female playing in Frankfurt, for example.
Yeah, and so first and foremost, it's worth saying the gaming industry is massive. And I mean, people not involved in it, I mean, I probably don't know about it, how big a scale it is. And I think it's sort of... I mean, for example, I think it's bigger than film, is it, and streaming music put together or something ridiculous. But I mean, I don't think it's quite underserved by advertising, isn't it?
It is, particularly in terms of, so advertising within within free to play games, in terms of reward based video advertising, and just you know interstitials, for example, that is commonplace in mobile gaming. And it generates significant revenues. But in terms of natural placements, advertising that sits within the gaming environment, that has historically only been sold on a pre-sale hard-coded basis. And that's the opportunity that we see cross-platform as an absolutely enormous space for us to go and open up. So that's what excites us.
Yeah, I've explained to people about, when I talk to people about you, I explain, I say, you know, when you watch a proper football match and there's adverts around the billboards that change like that, I said, that's what they do in video and in gaming. And so, and you are in FM 19, for people who don't know what that is, Football Manager, that is a football game. Now, you've just also launched in Dirt Rally. So, how is that going?
It's a different type of environment for us to sell into. So rather than being PC and tablet based, it's the first time we've stepped into the console domain, and it's created a number of interesting technical challenges and opportunities for us. And we've found with Codemasters them to be a wonderful help with us. And We've been delighted with some of the opportunities in which we are investigating with regards to our SDK integration, which I'm sure Fran who sat alongside me right now can probably tell you a little bit more about.
Yeah, first of all, Fran, thanks for coming on. But what is SDK?
It's a software development kit. It's basically a piece of software that sits within the game, and it's what we use to place our inventory within the environment and what we use to pull the data out of what adverts have been served, who they've been seen by, etc. As James said, the racing environment is an entirely new environment, and it's a really exciting one because, unlike in a football pitch, it's far more dynamic. And the way we're kind of looking to sell the imagery is your advertisement will be seen on a per race basis. So what you're getting is effectively up to 6, 7, 8 minutes of exposure for the price of what was a normal impression, which could potentially normally be 8, 20 seconds. So you're getting a huge amount of exposure for the same value. So racing for us is a very exciting market to get into.
Yeah. And at the moment, how's it going there? So I mean, technically, is it working as you'd expect?
So from a technical basis, we kind of agreed the initial scope of what we were planning to do. And then at the moment, we're kind of looking to add new features in, new functionality to really turn the racing games into kind of a programmatic, open it up to the programmatic landscape, which will be the first time that's ever been done before.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to see some guys on social media have taken pictures and they put them up there, and it does look amazing. That the game, but also the adverts within it, look amazing. And I suppose there's, I mean, it's hard to say, but on a technical level, I mean, what are the limits here, then, Fran? I mean, you know, I imagine your head is thinking we can do this anyway, or but what's are there limits here?
The only limits really from our business perspective is literally the biggest limit for us is time. Mm-hmm. So time is, we're always working against the clock, but in reality, with enough time and enough resource, the sky is literally the limit. Like, we can start measuring all kinds of data points. We can start integrating in all kinds of games. We can start taking a look at the secondary viewer market. Everything is opened up to us potentially. So yeah, I'd say time is the real restriction for us.
Yeah, okay. Let's cover some news off, because you guys released a bit of news recently. BidSack turns on first DSP with Avocet. Now, what does that mean? And what's the significance of that, James or Fran?
I'll start with that, and then I'll pass on to Fran about it. The significance of it being is that this is the first time that this type of inventory has ever been for sale on a demand-side platform based on the trading software in which media buyers go and buy ad inventory outside of a walled garden of digital advertising. So obviously you've got Google AdWords, Facebook advertising, they've got their own platforms for that. A DSP offers up pretty much any other type of display-based advertising for web and mobile. This is the first time that advertising that sits naturally within a gaming environment has been offered up on this type of platform. This software is not designed, even with the drop downs on there, to have this type of inventory within it. So it's been a wonderful challenge for us to work with the guys over at Avocet, who've actually been fantastic for us, to make sure that we can sort of bend and twist our ad inventory into that that trading software. The significance of that being is that once you have done it with one of them, you can do it with the rest of them. And that is where the majority of digital non-walled garden advertising cash goes through. So it's a significant step for us. It's probably worth Fran talking a little bit more about the intricacies of it, but it's a significant development from a scalability perspective. Fran, do you want to talk a little bit about the tech?
Yeah, absolutely. As James said, programmatic landscape is where the real kind of money sits and sloshes back and forth. And programmatic in it by its nature was built very much for web and mobile initially. And so we're opening up an entirely new environment, which is console, PC gaming. And so we've had to overcome a number of technical hurdles. And I'm sure in the future we'll find other technical hurdles which we'll overcome in the same way. But the integration with Avocet for us was, as James said, an enormous step forward. It's the first time these kind of imageries have been integrated into that programmatic landscape. I think it's that step forward into complete scalability, and that's the step we're looking to take.
Yeah, well, the fact that you are the first guys to be doing this means you're, sort of trailblazing in the industry in that sector, aren't you, really?
we absolutely are. We're trailblazing. Every kind of step forward we take is a new step within the industry, and we're trying to kind of move the industry forward, and we're dragging it along with us. So yeah, I'd say we're absolute trailblazers.
And the thing is, when you're a trailblazer, you never know if the proof of concept is there. But the fact is, you now have signed deals with quite a few operators and companies, and already you're live in two. So you've proved the concept, haven't you, really?
Absolutely. Absolutely proved the concept. I think it's what the most significant thing about this, the frustration, we talk about it internally, the frustration about being a public company, we want to tell investors more about what we're doing. However, at the same time, we don't want to give any potential competitor a roadmap of how to chase after us. So you can imagine that we have got a number of huge technical breakthroughs that have been occurring, such as getting ourselves onto the DSP of Avocet, which will have more to follow. Significant big DSPs will follow after that, that we will love to RNS as and when we can. There's also other things which are just as significant, which are very much along the lines of accreditation of this type of inventory, viewability of this type of inventory, how people can buy our inventory, can buy this ad space, and then report back to their the advertiser on how successful the campaign was. We're working with the greatest brains in the whole of the advertising world on those precise subjects. Whether or not it be a case of working with the IAB, who we're sponsoring their gaming seminar at the end of the year. Imagine we wouldn't be doing that unless we were absolutely on track for us to have a net new advertising category in in-game native. That'll be a significant event for us to go and talk even more openly about what we are doing. We've got a very exciting platform that is going live in July. And I think we'll probably start... We can start sharing on this that we're going to do an investor day in and around July, where we will allow people to come down to our office. We will demonstrate the platform in a live environment and let people see some of the new titles that we've got coming. We'll get some gaming experts, et cetera, down for it as well. But it's what is significant is that we can see the clear route to victory, and we are working in a very, very structured manner to make sure that we execute on the business plan.
Okay. So it looks like you're getting busy there, and part of getting busy, of course, is expanding the team. You did that recently with Maritz Natalini, I think his surname is pronounced, but explain a bit about Maritz and where he's from.
So Maritz has gone on board to kind of help manage the product development side of the business. As James was saying, there's huge technical breakthroughs we're making, and our tech resource is forever expanding because we're integrating new technologies, we're building new stuff. And Maritz has come from King, who made Candy Crush. Mm-hmm. He helped develop their advertising platform there. So he has a huge amount of experience in developing advertising platforms at enormous scales. I'm sure everyone's aware of the size of King, multi-billion exit to Activision Blizzard. He was on the board of the IAB. He's highly experienced, and I think he's going to add a huge amount of value to the business.
Yes, yeah, it's exciting. And coming up, you're going to the Game Developers Conference very soon, aren't you?
Yes, we are. We are flying out Friday morning. And we've got a number of very interesting meetings lined up out there. Honestly, Justin, I would love to be able to tell you who.
I know. I can tell by your breath there that you.
Imagine that there are a number of very interesting people that can help from the closer I'll probably get to it. Say new bits of inventory, future based inventory that we're in discussions with, whether or not that be hardware, new types of hardware, new platforms. Additional scalability linked to the secondary market, I think we could probably say that, and people who own that secondary type of market. And then there's some, we're constantly looking to build a stronger advisory panel around us as possible. And we're going to be meeting up with some of the biggest names in the gaming and advertising space. And some of them are, one person in particular is sits beautifully between the two worlds. Probably is the the only person to be C-level in both. So we've got people like that that we're meeting up with. So we're very, very excited about going out there.
Yeah, and these people you're meeting up with, I mean, especially the guys you said that the big guys or the interesting people, I mean, have they looked into you, or you just managed to get a meeting with them, or do they know about you, what you're doing?
We've got a quite strong advisory panel, I suppose we would call it, around us at the moment, who have done a bunch of warm introductions. Mm-hmm. Everyone's excited about what we're doing. We've not that beef in the advertising space or the gaming environment. It's predominantly inbounds, to be honest. What we found is that since this company pivoted into the world of gaming, even before we went up on AIM, the number of inbounds, particularly from like AAA sort of game studios, it's been significant. So it's predominantly inbound.
Yeah, good.
From very, very excited people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So now you're sort of, I don't know how many months in since you listed, but it's less than a year, obviously. And, you know, you went from having the idea to now actually running with it, and you're starting to get it working there. What's your thoughts on you know, practically where it could go and where you'd like it to be?
I want BidStack to be the biggest media owner in the video game market by the end of 2021. Is probably a fair sort of goal, and that includes non-native advertising as well, the reward-based stuff. I want us to be the biggest in terms of revenue, biggest in terms of impression numbers as well. That's the target we've got internally here, and that's just phase one. I think it's worth saying that once the mass adoption of things like augmented reality come to fruition over the next 5-10 years or so, the likes of the Facebook advertising, the Google AdWords, the way in which digital advertising is bought and used as it is at the moment, will completely change. And at that stage, by us starting off in virtual and then mixed reality worlds from video games and sticking with entertainment for the time being, but crucially generating revenue now and into the future, we will be very, very well positioned to take the fight to any advertising media owner in the world, and that is our long term goal, and that is the significance play for this. I know there's we see an awful lot of excitement on Twitter about what we're doing from some of our very supportive retail investors, but it's worth saying that our ambition, and we are working towards that in a very diligent way, is for us to be an absolute major global player in the advertising world going over the next few years and beyond.
Excellent. What's to stop someone just coming along and like say, this is a, you know, someone putting their old, playing the old devil's advocate, but what's to stop a bigger company seeing what you're doing right now and just trying to overtake you, or you know, maybe take you out?
The beauty is that we are working through all the intricacies of actually making this advertising viable from an agency point of view. We're talking to it's all the very boring admin related pieces, so we're not going to be accreditation. Say it's. I'll give you one example of advertisers or advertising agencies want to independently count the number of ad impressions that they are getting in our games. They want to independently count it. So we give them a number. They want to put their own tracking pixels into a gaming and into the content which they give us to independently verify it. Which is a huge challenge into a game environment on a PlayStation or on PC. It's never been done before, but I wouldn't mind saying, you know, Fran is an excellent tech guy, and him and his team have adding Maritz into the mix, and adding having someone like Grace Cook here as well has been significant for us. It's given us the route in which how to do precisely that. We know there are no one else out there who are coming across and speaking to the right people about these challenges at the moment. That is from a technical point of view. That's the intricacies of how we're protecting the business and guiding it and writing white papers about it, etc. and working with the governing bodies on this to make sure that we are setting how this inventory can be bought. And on top of that, from a commercial perspective, we locked down the inventory on 3-year exclusive to Bidstack deals as well, which have got auto renewals in them. So it's significant. We're protecting it commercially. We're leading the way in terms of technical expertise. And we're sort of our knowledge base is just way ahead of anyone out there.
Yeah. Okay. So you're live, I think, in 2 games now at the moment, aren't you? And then, but you've got deals signed with others. What's the next sort of significant milestone you're obviously allowed to talk about, or you're heading towards?
Right. How can I? So, imagine that we are looking at all areas of the business internally in terms of the type of individuals that we could potentially, I don't know, add to our board. Mm-hmm. Those type of conversations are always ongoing, and there are some very interesting people around us. So when those can be spoken about, we will. On top of that, there is, imagine if we were to get our inventory onto an App Nexus, a Trade Desk, that type of platform. If we were then to RNS that would be a tremendous breakthrough and a significant for revenue jump for the business. So that's something which we'd look out for. And then, as we always are, we are always ongoing in our discussions with different game developers. There is no one who has told us to go away, which is significant. Nearly all of them have come to us direct, and we are at various different stages of discussion with those. GDC, part of the reason for us going out there is to go and continue some discussions with those interested parties. And when we can talk about a couple of them, we will, but it's fair to say that there are some very exciting names in that list and that pipeline. So, yeah.
Marvelous stuff. Marvelous stuff. You're talking to all those people. Some may happen, some may not. But like I said, they all seem to be very responsive to what you're doing. In the meantime, James, listen, you know, for people listening right now who likes the sound of what you're doing but are not yet following the story, give them those 3 quick reasons in summary why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
I say it's the scalability of the market that we're in. Literally, we are moving towards the point where we can frictionlessly scale. The progress we've made today is phenomenal, and we will be announcing more pieces soon, which are significant and very interesting. And from a pure equity standpoint, Francesco and I are sitting on a fair swathe of equity and are very incentivized to make sure that this works out ourselves. So that's our 3 key reasons, I would suppose.
Marvellous stuff. James, Fran, thanks for coming on the podcast. And like you say, you sound like you're very busy, so no doubt we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Cheers, Justin. Cheers.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You're right, John.
Yes, very good, thank you.
Now, there hasn't been much corporate news out, really, is there, on the, you know, the company front? But certain things are happening, and you're just talking about you're looking at gold and gold-rich stocks at the moment. And why is that?
Well, we've seen the Fed make a number of comments on slowing down the rate of rate U.S. rate rises.
Yeah.
And there's further news today that they're likely to delay these rate rises this year because inflation is looking softer. And also we saw a poor jobs report. Suddenly the rate of jobs growth in the US had fallen away. And I think that's because they're at record employment numbers, I think, and they've had huge jobs growth over the last year since Donald Trump came into power, really. And whilst that jobs growth is going on and people are earning more money in the US economy, the inflation rate is somewhat lower than it has been. So the February inflation rate, CPI and core CPI numbers are slightly softer than in January. And this is enabling policymakers to just take their foot off that pedal. That, I think, will help the rest of the world enormously. because as the US raised interest rates, money was pouring out of emerging markets and back into the US dollar. That was raising the dollar. That was pushing gold and other commodity prices lower, and causing all sorts of problems from a fund flow perspective and for companies operating, particularly in emerging markets. And I think it's well worth the US being a bit kinder to the rest of the world and just slowing that down. And that's what they look like they're doing.
Yeah, that jobs report came massive, missed massively. 180,000 jobs they were expecting to put on. They put on 20,000, which is like,
yes.
Some people are even questioning the figures, saying that must be a blip, seasonal blip due to the government shutdown or something happening or something's going wrong. Because that was a very big miss, wasn't it? And if that is correct, then it'd be interesting to see what next month's figures come out with, because that is slightly worrying. You missed by that much, isn't it?
Well, there are some suggestions that a lot of the jobs growth has been created by taking up slack in the jobs market, and it may be that slack has gone. Alternatively, these things often get blamed on the weather. We'll see what that really is going forwards. It's not always that easy to know, but an awful lot of low level jobs have been upgraded, so there should be a lot more money coming into the hands of lower paid people in the US, and that should be good for their economy as a whole.
Yeah, do you know what I've done recently? I just dipped my foot in a gold ETF. But I also, originally though, I dipped my foot in a silver ETF because silver's lagging. And the gold-silver ratio that normally plays out?
Yes.
It's not working well. Silver is really lagging, and it's due an upgrade a little bit, just to catch up with gold, because I think on a scale of like 0 to 100, and the ratio being an average around about 12 to 15, at the moment it's up at 85, meaning it's really out of sync, silver with gold. So I've got a little silver ETF there. But I mean, as far as companies, any news out on companies, gold companies this week, John, or what?
There isn't so much news. I mean, we're still very keen on Anglo Asian, who have been running around London recently. They've put out a new resource report that tells us that they've got more gold than they knew of previously, and they are very optimistic for further resource definition going forward. So I think that gives us more confidence and demonstrates that the company should be able to deliver consistently on its dividends going forwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was news out from what's the name as well, wasn't it? Bluebird
Brimming Limited.
Oh, sorry, yes, no, BMV. I was talking about sort of Bluebird Merchant Ventures. You mentioned just before we came on.
Yes. Yes, they are. They're awaiting some drill results from their Kojang mine in South Korea. Mm-hmm. They have just submitted their mining application report to the various authorities in South Korea. So they're actually waiting for questions to come back on the Goban project, and then they've got to go through a 40 working day consultation process on the Kochang mine. So applications in for two mine developments in South Korea, and hopefully the questions will be sensible, and hopefully the permissions will come through. But it is South Korea, so it's slightly unknown to us from a permitting perspective.
Yeah, that is crazy, isn't it? The mine there, the Kojang mine, they're saying here in their notes, but at the bottom there, it was closed in 1975 when the gold price was $140 per ounce. It's nearly 10 times that now, so you can see the potential. And it's not a lot of capital they need there, the capex, is it, to get it going?
It's a very low capex because all the mining infrastructure has been previously built. Mm. It means that all they have to do is just reaccess the mines and start pulling out the ore that was previously blasted. I mean, they will spend money on further development, but hopefully that cash will come out of the cash flow that they develop. So it's a very cheap startup operation, although it's at a modest level. But they do have a longer term target of ramping this up to 100,000 ounces a year. So
yeah.
Let's see where they get. But that's quite an ambitious target, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I like gold. I think you're right. I think we've hit a bit of a peak at the moment. I don't think the Fed's going to force interest rates up any further, you know, in this environment. So I think gold should strengthen, hopefully. All right, so what else you mentioned? Birimian there. So what's that related to?
Well, Birimian Limited are the big lithium project next to Kodal Minerals.
Okay.
Kodal is our client, and there's a lot of interest to us. Birimian is a bigger project. It's about 2 years ahead of Kodal in terms of resource definition and work done, but that work is always very helpful to Kodal and will enable it to catch up. And so what Birimian Limited are saying are they're looking to improve the recovery rates that are expected off their Galema lithium project, and optimize things like water and other infrastructure parts of the plan. So they're taking a pre-feasibility study into a definitive study, and the results of that should be directly applicable to Kodal as well. Although, if anything, we think the Kodal project is slightly better because of the metallurgical properties of its lithium. So we're quite optimistic there.
And they raised some funds, didn't they, recently? Did they, Kodal? Was that right? They raised some money?
Yes, they just raised some money. So from investors, I think that was £700,000.
That's right.
So it helps to fill the tin, so they can carry on developing the project.
Yes. And I know you're a commodity bull generally, John, but... what's your thought at the moment? I mean, are you worried about global growth?
Well, there are some concerns from a global growth perspective, and certain economies are appear to be slowing down a bit. It's I'm not too worried, because I think China has got so large now that its growth rate is not really that easy to sustain at the high levels where it's been. Mm-hmm. I think it will carry on importing huge quantities of commodities, but I think that rate of growth just has to pull back a little bit.
Yeah. And I suppose when you're looking at any sort of investment, looking at companies to invest in the commodity space, what you should be looking at in this area is the cost, isn't it? If you're in a low-cost, you know, sort of producer, or can be a potentially low-cost producer, then that's going to be in your favour over the long term, isn't it?
Well, we always try and look for the lowest cost producers that we can find, but it often surprises me that investors are quite keen to buy into leverage, and often will buy into higher cost producers. So,
they look for the size of a project rather than cost, do they? Or
sometimes they're looking for things that have just got more leverage to an increase in the underlying commodity price.
Okay.
So, for example, if you're looking at gold, platinum, and palladium, you can look at Sibanye-Stillwater, which is listed in South Africa and on the SEC, for leverage there. It is a high cost producer, and often investors are quite keen on that sort of thing.
Yeah. Okay, John, end on a quiz, a little quiz question for you, okay?
Yes.
Now, I've been looking at funds recently, and I went onto BlackRock's iShares website, and they have a list there of all the funds. They've got about 392 funds, and you can order them by performance. And I thought, okay, well, let's have a look at what's done the best in the last year or so. And I looked at them, and the performance of an ETF is a commodity that's done the best over the last year. In fact, annualized returns here. Look at this. Since 5 years, it's only 13%, but in the last year, it's 19%. It's done over 2 years, 55%. Over 3 years, 23% a year, this is, annualized. So what commodity do you think that is?
I think that's palladium.
Yes, you got the points. That's it, yeah. It's done phenomenally well. Palladium's gone mad, isn't it?
It has become increasingly popular because with the decline in popularity of diesel, auto companies are making more gasoline vehicles, and gasoline engines use more palladium in the auto catalysts. So that's important there.
Yeah. I wonder how long that will last for, though. I wonder when the EV sort of equilibrium will start playing into effect. They're writing around 2025, and that's when they start having a major impact. I mean, it is now, obviously, it's starting to, but I mean, because there's only about 3% of the world's cars, isn't it, on EVs, aren't they, I think?
Yes, but that's set to grow rapidly. Yes. The other consideration is that hybrid vehicles, which have smaller petrol engines, they have to have a greater loading, or should have a greater loading of platinum and palladium, because they tend to have to do more cold starts. So an auto catalyst doesn't work so well when it's cold. It needs to warm up. So if you're stop starting these engines all the time, yeah, you do need a better performing catalyst, and that basically means more palladium in there to make it function as well as the regulators want to see.
Very interesting, John. Good fact to finish on there. Marvellous stuff, John. Thanks for that, and we'll catch up next week, fella.
Will do. Cheerio.
OK, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, i3 Energy, that's i3E. At four, Regal Petroleum, that's RPT, I think it is. Yes, it is. Just checking that out, making sure. At three, Proactis Holdings, PhD. At two, Red Emperor Resources. Let's just check how much they're down. Down 84% today. Due to a bit of a dust. Well, it's not dust. They discovered it's probably not commercial. Their Winx one well in Alaska. And, of course, they've sunk massively. But that's what happens to high-impact drills, I suppose. Odds against. And when you fail to discover what you're looking for, you know, this is share price gets pulled from underneath you. But it's had a lovely rally. So, hopefully, some of the holders there managed to take some profit recently, because they did have a positive update. And then now this negative one. In fact, they had a negative update, then a positive one, and now a negative one again. And the most followed company is Greatland Gold, GGP, after that $65 million farming potential. That's maximum farming there with Newcrest. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, i3 Energy, results of placing. At four, Strategic Minerals, purchase of shares. And it was director purchasing there, or someone with managerial responsibility. At three, Predator Oil and Gas, PRD, a progress update at Trinidad. Hopefully, we can get Paul, the CEO, on the podcast very soon. At two, EVR Holdings, Melody VR signs four music licensing agreements. And number one, most liked RNS, came from Talau Energy, or Talu Energy, of course, at tender technical stage, decision approved. That's for the Botswanan government, of course. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.